I was busted texting while driving.
I was on social media.
I copped a $337 fine.
I lost my peas.
So, if you're holding your phone while driving...
Take it from me. You can stop it or cop it.
And now on the weekend edition, The Good Health Show, brought to you by our healthy friends, the BMI Clinic.
Yes, it's time to talk health and well-being with Dr. Adrian Sartoretto from the BMI Clinic, which is the largest and most experienced specialist practice of its kind in Australia, providing a multidisciplinary and holistic approach to weight loss and weight management. Adrian, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So we're going to talk about a number of things today, but I can't help but hear that you're a little bit blocked up there.
Yeah, I've been struck down with a man flu on Boxing Day.
What a terrible time of year.
And particularly horrible. For a doctor. I mean, really.
Just desserts, I think. Yeah.
But tell me, can you write out a prescription for your own medicine?
It's frowned upon, but if it's absolutely necessary, you can.
I love it. Worth getting a degree alone, I think, for that one.
So what are your tips for beating man flu? What have you been doing over the past week or so to try and get rid of it?
A lot of fluids and a lot of rest, to be absolutely honest. There's very few other things that have been proven to sort of help with flu. There are a couple of little things, though. So chicken soup has been proven to help.
See, I thought that was just a myth.
No, but it was one of these things that actually has a bit of basis to it. So chicken soup helps.
Is that because of the bone broth? Does it have to be the particularly brothy soup?
We don't have any idea how it works, except for the fact that it tends to shorten the duration of flu by about a day or so. Okay. So it's not a huge reduction, but, you know, any help is good help as far as I'm concerned. And the other one is zinc lozenges can sometimes help. But I was down the south coast in Jervis Bay with the family, so I didn't have access to any of those things this past week.
Oh, that sounds tough. It is that time of year, isn't it? And I'm sure a lot of people can relate. You work incredibly hard all year. The minute you stop... you get sick. Why does that happen? Does our defense system just relax and everything comes in?
It often feels like that, doesn't it? I mean, maybe it's the fact that you're distracted, and when you've got nothing to distract your attention, you sort of feel it much worse. In my case, I've got two reasons for it, and their names are Leo and Alex. One's two and the other one's 3.5.
Something to look forward to.
Now, this time of year, we quite often make New Year's resolutions. One of them is to detox. So we thought we'd have a little bit of a chat about after all of the rich foods we've been eating over the past week, the leftovers that will probably continue if you're like me. I've still got ham in the fridge. How do you suggest people go about doing a detox? And we probably should, just at the start of this segment too, just a little bit of a disclaimer as well, that this is not specified and specific advice, but general advice. What is your recommendation for detoxes?
Well, I might even take one step back actually in terms of, well, is detox even necessary? I think this is one of the most pervasive sorts of rituals that we've all sort of developed over the last couple of decades, which is go all out over Christmas and New Year's and then try hard to rein it in and go on to this detox. And this is a multi-billion dollar industry. I mean, everyone does it at some point or another.
Liquids in jars that they sell, they must
all
make
sorts
trillions.
Of things, powders, vitamins, supplements, all these sorts of things. You can generally lump them together. And the fact of the matter is that we occupy a highly evolved organism, the human body, which has dealt with toxins long before detox regimens were ever available. And by the way, we've never lived a cleaner, more healthy lifestyle than we do now. I mean, if we wanted to look around the time of the Industrial Revolution, there were a lot more toxins in our environment, and we got through quite well. The fact of the matter is that the human body is very, very capable. Between the liver, the kidneys, and the lungs, our bodies are actually very, very capable of detoxing ourselves by themselves. In fact, the less intervention you put in, the better. Most people don't realise that actually amongst medication, if we're going to categorise it broadly, amongst medication causes for liver abnormalities in this country, the number one reason for liver abnormalities is herbal medications.
Really?
And this is part of this phenomenon. People feel like they need to take something to give their body a help. In fact, in this day and age, the best thing you can do is just lay off the heavy stuff. The body will catch up.
Isn't that incredible? Because it is an amazing thing, the human body. Maybe we don't give it as much credit as we should by trying to use all these outside influences to help make us better when we don't need it.
Absolutely. I think, look, if you really wanted to do a few things to try to make amends for the excesses of the last week or so, drink water, drink lots of it, number one. Number two, lay off the really processed stuff. Just eat naturally, eat whole foods from plants, ideally. Even if it's only for a week, you might find it a little bit tough for that week, but that sometimes is also what people look for out of a detox, right? Is that it has to be a little bit tough because you want to come out the other end knowing that you've achieved something.
I think one of the reasons a lot of people do detox is not just to detox their body of chemicals and foreign bodies, but to lose weight. That's, you know, the end product that they want. So what advice can you give people who have made that as a resolution? Because we know it's probably up there as one of the most common New Year's resolutions, along with quitting smoking, etc., etc.
Absolutely. Look, if you can do the plant-based thing for a week, even if it is only for a week, that's a great place to start. And I'll give you another a sneaky tip as well. One of the things that most people aren't aware of is that we know what starch is. I mean, it's present. It's the carbohydrate that's present in pasta and bread and potatoes and rice. But there are some forms of starch that our bodies just can't process and digest. Now, as it turns out, this resistant starch is actually very healthful for us because the good bacteria living inside us can process it, and they produce a whole lot of different anti-inflammatory and even anti-cancer properties as it goes through. And the easiest way that you can get your hands on some of this resistant starch: make some pasta, put it in the fridge for 24 hours, and then have a cold or even a warm pasta salad the following day.
Do you know, is that what the starch, because so when you leave pasta in the fridge without any sauce in it, it does get that kind of coating and become quite
Well, that's because it absorbs a lot more water, and so it does become a little bit more stodgy and dry. But the structure of the starch actually changes. Now, that will work for pasta. It'll also work for potatoes. Now, you've always got to be a little bit cautious about, you know, the sorts of dressing you're putting on these sorts of salads. But from the carbohydrate perspective, that little trick will decrease the calories by almost half.
Wow. Yeah. I have never heard that. So half the calories just by leaving it in the fridge or whatever for a 24 day.
24 hours, yep.
That's amazing. Yeah.
That's my new diet resolution. Now, just I'm not cutting out pasta.
I'm going to eat more pasta. I'm going to eat twice as much pasta. And Doctor, thank you so much for your time.
That's the problem. The only side effect that you might get from this little trick, though, is that you might get a little bit more flatulence because, obviously, the good bacteria, they're fermenting.
Why does everything have a downside?
Erin, not next Saturday night before we're in a studio together for 6 hours.
Okay,
Sunday,
I'll keep that in mind. I think Sean's probably more concerned, my partner, than you are, Nat, to be honest.
Fairly so. Some of the other New Year's resolutions, reducing alcohol intake and cutting down sugar. How do you recommend people actually make these stick? We spoke last week about going all in, so not just making little steps in your weight loss goals, but going all out. When it comes to something like giving up, or not giving up alcohol, but reducing alcohol or giving up sugar, what's your advice to people?
Well, let's start with sugar, because we've spoken about alcohol on a couple of occasions on this program, but sugar's a really important one. So the recommended daily intake of sugar for a human being, and there's no hard and fast rule on this, but it's about 10 teaspoons are taken over the course of a day. Now, that's what we would define as healthful to remain under.
Give us an example of what that is, by the way, in real food. Like, what is 10 grams of sugar?
Yeah, well, so, sorry, 10 teaspoons
10
of
teaspoons,
sugar.
Sorry, yeah, sugar.
So,
is...
But the problem is that, so 1 teaspoon of sugar is worth about 4 grams. And the issue here is that there's a lot of foods that we eat that have added sugars to it. And so probably one of the best things that you could do for yourself is when you're picking up a food label, have a look at that food label and look at the little row that says sugars next to it. Keep in mind that there are two ways that information is presented. One of them is per serve and the other one is per 100 grams. Now, if you're going to have what is recommended as a serve, then use that. But otherwise, you can use the per 100 as a comparator, so you can compare different brands. And just be mindful that everything has sugar in it, including your breakfast cereals. I mean, the amount of sugar in most breakfast cereals these days is mind-boggling, let alone yogurts, a lot of confectioned yogurts, let alone the cakes and sweets that we traditionally think of as being sweet.
What about the sugars in fruits? Are they as bad? Is it a different type of sugar?
It is a different type of sugar, so there are lots and lots of different types of sugars. The sugar predominantly found in fruit is something called fructose. Now, the recommended daily serving of fruit is 2 per day. Most people think you can go open slather, but actually, if you have too much fruit, you can start to run into problems. In particular, gout starts to flare up, amongst other things. So you can have high triglycerides as well as gouty flares from high fructose foods. So fruits, for example, that are high in fructose, so things like watermelon, mango, apples, even pears have a little bit of fructose in them as well. And so you really want to make sure that when you're having those sorts of things, you're keeping in mind, two moderate-sized servings a day.
If you do have any questions for the doctor, 131 873 is the number. It's your chance to get free medical advice, though disclaimer not specified specifically to you. Yada, 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 yada. Well, what advice can you give people who, I think we looked at yesterday, there was January 12 is the date that most people give up on their New Year's resolution, regardless of what it is. At the BMI clinic, how do you ensure that your clients stick to their weight loss goals?
There are lots of different techniques and different things work for different people, but probably one of the most important thing that you can do, is actually write it down. Put it somewhere that you can see.
On the fridge. Yeah. Right. How convenient.
Wherever it might be, but whatever your goals are for the new year, make sure that you write them down and that you revisit them on a regular basis. The other thing is to make sure that they're actually realistic goals,
yeah,
because there's nothing worse than having a goal that you're never going to be able to achieve. Because the problem is once you fall short of that goal, it's sort of like you give completely up and almost work against yourself. So having reasonable, achievable goals that you can see on a regular basis and keep yourself accountable. Tell other people if you need to.
We're chatting with Dr. Adrian Sartoretto from the BMI Clinic. We're talking health and wellbeing. We'd love you to join us, 131 873. Thanks for tuning in this Sunday afternoon. We're talking health and wellbeing with Dr. Adrian Sartoretto from the BMI Clinic. You can check them out at bmiclinic.com.au. Now, it is hot. It's already, 40 degrees in Sydney's west, and, of course, it's always hot in North Queensland. What is your recommendation for staying cool, apart from the obvious sitting in the pool all afternoon?
Yeah, look, the heat is pervasive. I mean, it really, really affects you and some people more than others. I mean, young children, but in particular the frail, the elderly, and people with a particular medical condition. So in particular, heart problems or kidney problems, even liver problems. Many of these patients actually are told to stick with what we call a fluid restriction, which means they're only told that they can drink a litre or a litre and a half a day. And in temperatures like this, it can really sort of go awry. There isn't any sort of special knowledge around this, really. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely, though, important to stay out of the heat. So stay indoors, keep the fan on. If you've got air conditioning, now's the time to use it. And just keep hydrated as much as you can.
On that issue, for people who aren't on restricted intake, how much should we be drinking?
So this is a common question, and this is one that sort of Dr. Google has all sorts of different opinions on. But really, for health and wellbeing, 2 litres a day, depending on obviously how active you are, 2 litres a day is a good target for 95% of people.
Do you mean 2 litres as a benchmark if you're more active, more?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. So if you're working a manual job or if you're out in the heat, then obviously you're going to need a lot more. But for most people, 2 litres a day is a really good figure.
Can you get that 2 litres from other sources, say
Diet Coke?
Diet Coke, which I'm sorry, but does have a water component.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
All of that.
Hold your laughter.
Hang on,
it's genuine.
Are you
it's
agreeing
legitimate.
With her there?
Well, all of that counts as fluid, right?
Thank
so you're not
you.
Going to become sort of terribly dehydrated if you're getting your fluid intake from things like Diet Coke. It's not the best source of fluid, and there are other things that come along with it, which are problematic as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, absolutely it counts.
Another slightly selfish question. I hope it might relate to other people as well. But we've got a nearly 7-month-old baby. We've got no air conditioning at home. So at the moment, the temperature, we've got the little monitor for where we put her down in her room. The temperature's kind of goes between 25 and 27 degrees. She's just wrapped in a muslin. I can't pronounce muslin wrap and a singlet. What's the ideal temperature and is that too hot? Do we need to be doing something different?
I don't think we do. So I'm keeping in mind here, I'm an adult physician, not a pediatrician. So I'm talking to you here as a parent rather than anything else.
Yes.
There is no perfect temperature. I mean, tell me one civilization in the world that has had one temperature that they've been able to raise their children
in. That is
a
very good point. So, i.e. in the African jungle, babies will be sleeping through.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Gotcha.
So the idea here is to make sure that the rule of thumb for young babies is, have as many layers as you might be wearing plus one, and just check on them. Make sure that they're not sort of too sweaty or irritable, and make sure that they're getting enough fluid as well. So if they're being breastfed, they should really, first sort of 4 to 6 months, if they are breastfed, they should only be having breast milk. If they're bottle fed, then they only need the bottle, the formula. They don't need extra water. Extra water to those really young babies can actually cause major problems. But if they're a little bit older, then giving them, and if they are sort of transitioning onto solids, having some juicy fruits to be able to suck on, as well as some extra water through the day, is a really good thing.
Great.
131873, if you'd like to ask a question of Dr. Adrian Sartoretto. Darren's in Botany. Good afternoon to you, Darren.
How you going?
Good. You've got a question about filtered water.
Yeah, I do. I've got a somebody I know sells these machines that make this stuff called Kagan water. Now, I think it's related around the pH of water, get to try and get your body in a pH state. Is there any truth to the science that the less you keep your body in a good pH, that's better for you?
Right, so we're talking about this filtered water and the ionised drink bottles. I know some celebrity health gurus have some out there. What's your view on those, Doctor?
I'm actually surprised this question hasn't come up before, to be honest. So pretty much all water, depending on what's dissolved in it, has a pH around about 7, give or take. There actually is no additional benefit to having it alkalized or
really?
Acidified.
Okay.
Some people will talk about lemon water. Some will talk about sort of alkaline water. There's absolutely no benefit because, as we were already mentioning, in particular in this case, the kidneys as well as the lungs will correct the amount of acid or alkali in your system very, very quickly.
So it's a waste of money.
Complete waste of money. And in fact, the guy who came up with this whole alkaline sort of way of eating for health, I don't know if you're following the news, but I think in the last 3 months or so, he was actually jailed and fined several million dollars because he ran a health farm where he was bringing people in with cancers and other major health problems and giving them alkaline water and so on lieu of regular therapy. And he's been jailed because
of it.
And
so he should
right.
be.
Well, Darren, thank you for raising the call. Appreciate it. I'm one of those people that bought one of those drink bottles at the advice of my speech therapist, actually. So I was having a lot of issues with my nodules because I have them and they flare up, and I had 6 weeks off air this time last year. It was terrible.
Really?
Yeah.
And a speech therapist recommended
alkaline water, saying, and I had to cut out all, as I say this, my voice gets croaky, but I had to cut out all citrus and things like that, you know, no lemon tea like we were having, but alkaline water I was promised would help. Of course, I didn't necessarily notice the difference, but one of the big things they also suggested, actually it was the ENT that suggested, was the Mediterranean diet, that really plays a much bigger role than the type of water. But yeah, I bought one of the fancy drink bottles.
Absolutely. Well, the pH of the mouth naturally is a little bit acidic, and your case is a little bit different to the mode of eating sort of with alkaline foods and water. But because the pH of the mouth is slightly acidic, if you are eating acidic foods and if you've already got some vocal cord issues or laryngeal issues, then that can make things a little bit worse. So by trying to neutralise some of that acid, I suspect that's where the speech therapist was coming from there.
Yeah.
But that's only a local thing. As soon as you've actually swallowed it and gotten into the rest of your system, the alkali or the acid is gone.
Now, there were two words you mentioned that I want to pick you up on. Doctor, yeah. Google.
My best friend.
I think it's so common. We have this, amazing thing at our fingertips that we can search and get questions answered almost immediately. I've had doctors say to me, now I'm going to write this down, but don't Google it and freak yourself out. But we do it, don't we?
It's natural to want to know what's going on. And I think, to be absolutely frank, I think doctors have a really important role here. I mean, when you're seeing your doctor, you're seeing them not for the label, but actually for an explanation, for an understanding. And I take that actually very seriously.
And to get tailored information specific to you.
Absolutely. I mean, the title doctor actually comes in recognition of someone who's learned. Someone who's teaching is where the title comes from. And so I think that's actually really an important part of the role of a doctor. And I think if you're really not getting that information out of your doctor, of course you're going to go search on Google and try to find things. But there are a couple of big problems with that. First of all, some diseases are a bit of a spectrum. So this is certainly true, for example, in inflammatory bowel disease, which is the thing that comes to mind. But there can be very mild forms of Crohn's disease, for example, and there can be very severe forms of Crohn's disease. And so if you're on the mild end and you're seeing sort of the worst potential outcomes of that disease, then that has real implications, both in terms of your anxiety and well-being, aside from the fact that it's not actually even relevant to you. The other thing is that the biggest problem with the internet and the information that's available on there is that, and I think a lot of journalists would appreciate this, whenever someone produces a piece of writing, there's usually an angle. Now, none of us actually think critically about, well, why is this person writing this? Where are they coming from on this? Do they have an agenda? Are they doing this to make money? Is this a trusted institution or not? And so if you're not very critical about the piece of information that you're assessing, then you can very easily fall prey to someone's opinion rather than the fact that's relevant to you.
Well, I did say this to you last week. I mentioned an article about Diet Coke or something that said that it was amazing and not dangerous on any level, yada, yada. And you said, well, yeah, that was commissioned by the company that makes Diet Coke. So you're exactly right. Who writes the article? Yeah. And even if it's on a reputable site or, you know, it looks like a sanctioned website, you've still got to look very carefully at what the angle is.
Absolutely. And there are a couple of other little points here. Even when you go into search on something like Google, how you phrase your search is actually really important, because you actually end up feeding into your own biases. If you're searching, will this kill me, for example, then you're going to find everything that says this disease and killing
kill
a person.
Me. You know?
And so this is what we call a confirmation bias. You go in with an expectation, and because you've built that expectation into the question, you'll get what
it will reassure what it thinks you already think.
Echo chamber.
As opposed to will this cure me?
Absolutely.
And then suddenly the word comes up with cure and you get a whole lot of other matches.
That's absolutely fascinating.
And
it
then
really
there's
is.
One last thing that you've got to be careful with Dr. Google, and this is something called the Dunning-Kruger effect. And this is a very complicated psychological term to basically say a little bit of information can be a dangerous thing, because sometimes when we know a little bit, our confidence grows disproportionately to the amount that we actually know. And this is something I can tell you, I mean, through 16 years of medical training, there are lots of times at various stages in my training where I thought I knew 99%, and then something will come out of left field and blow you away. Things that you don't expect that should be are absolutely the way. And so one of the things that most doctors, and this I think is very frustrating for a lot of people seeing their doctor, you'll never be able to pin a doctor down on saying absolutely yes or absolutely no.
Correct.
And that's because we now know enough that we can't know everything.
That's a really good point.
131873, if you'd like to ask a question. Brian's called in from Fairfield in Brisbane. Good afternoon, Brian. You have a question for the doctor?
Oh, I do. Good afternoon, people.
G'day, Brian.
A curious doctor, you haven't mentioned salt on a sweaty day like this, because from what I understand, consuming just small amount of salt with water as well, occasionally, assists the blood cells by allowing the water into the blood cells.
Absolutely. So sodium and salts in particular can quickly become lost through sweating and through other things. And so keeping up salt levels are important. But in the common Western diet that we'd face in Australia, salt is not an issue. In fact, salt is actually pretty liberal in our diets. And so we don't usually have to make compensation for that. Having said that, there are obviously illnesses. So if you've got a vomiting illness, for example, or a tummy bug where you're losing at the other end, then keeping your salts up through things like gastrolyte or hydrolyte is really important. And that's where you should be getting your salts from. The other commercial things that you buy at the service station, for example,
potato
sports drinks.
Scallops.
The sports drinks actually don't do it right.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, good to know. Well, thank you for the call, Brian. Really appreciate it. And Dr. Adrian Sartoretto, thank you so much for your time.
It's a pleasure as always.
And we hope you feel better soon.
Thank you, me too.
Good luck with the man flu.